HRNradio.com, where positive people and podcasts unite.
Hey there, welcome to HealthyLife.net. This is Steve Aspel, Aspel on the Esplanade, and we are broadcasting live from a top-secret location in Redondo Beach, California. And I understand that we are one of the colder places in the United States right now. It's warmer back east than we have it here. It's a gloomy, rainy day, but it's always a beautiful day in Redondo Beach. So anyway, we're here, HealthyLife.net, and I have a guest today that I've been trying to get on for quite a while, and he doesn't even know I've been one of his admirers for a long time. But his name is Alec Johnson, and he's a student, actor, and athlete at Redondo Union High School, and extremely, extremely talented young guy. Of course, everybody in the world's young to me, basically. But anyway, Alec, thank you for being here and coming on to be my guest. So
thank you so much, Steve. It's quite an honor.
That's pretty cool. You call me Steve here. It's not Mr. Aspel. It's Steve.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, that's right.
Student.
yeah, just Steve. We're just two guys hanging out in the radio station now. But you have You've been in the plays over here at Redondo High School for, you're a senior now, right?
So this is four years of plays and musicals as well.
And musicals. And
yeah.
I'll get into that about how I got interested in the musicals, and the plays. But I'm a huge, huge fan, and I don't just go to one or two of them. I like to go to three or four and I just like to see them over and over again.
Of the same show,
Of the same show. I see reruns. So, but tell me about yourself before I get into your acting here. You got parents, obviously. You're 18 years old, so they're around. Are they?
Yeah, I mean they come here and there.
They come here. They're part of your life.
Yeah, born in Beverly Hills, senior side end, and then lived in Redondo, same location, all 18 years of my life.
Right.
My parents have lived there for about 22 years because my brother's 21 now. But kind of grew up here in Redondo. Went to Lincoln Elementary, North Redondo, then Adams, and now right at Redondo. Senior year, finishing it off. Like a champ.
You're a product of Redondo High School. I mean, product of Redondo school system.
Yeah, it's been amazing to being in this this district all these years. It's kind of weird to. I know a lot of kids, you know, they move around a lot, and it's weird, or they have divorced parents, maybe they move to another city. But luckily, I've been able to stay in this great city for longest time.
Good. And we're proud of the schools. As mayor, I'm really proud of the school.
Yeah.
It helps everything. We have quality kids because of it, and property values are high because of it. It's just, but we have leaders coming out of that high school.
High demand to get in.
High demand, I know it is.
Only way to go.
So, your parents, what are their names?
My mom's name is Ishida, and my dad's name is Kirk. My mom's a financial advisor in El Segundo, and my dad works in Hollywood as a broadcaster for AT&T.
So he's a real broadcaster, not like me.
No. Yeah. He used to be a telephone guy, but now he designs circuits for big award shows like Golden Globes, Oscars, Emmys. So sometimes I get to go to work with him sometimes and, you know, look at the Oscars.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Take the kid to work day.
Yeah.
Okay. So how did your parents meet? I know you told me an interesting story, so tell me before we showed up.
Yeah, my mom worked for Cantor Fitzgerald for a lot of years of her life, probably in her early 20s, she started working at Cantor Fitzgerald, and my dad was the phone guy for them as well. So he'd come in, and he'd do his little thing, and I guess they just started talking, went on a couple of dates, and then, boom, married. Well, probably a longer process than that, but it's
kind
of cool.
We'll stick with that boom there.
Yeah, boom. Like they're
married how many years, and your older brother's how old? We'll figure that out.
Yeah, I think they've been married for about 24 years, and my brother's 21, and I'm 18.
Okay.
So it's been pretty crazy.
So he was working on the phone lines and hit on the help.
Exactly.
Good for him. Okay.
Yeah, he met
that's cool.
Woman of his dreams.
Yes, but your mom's not from here.
No, she was born and partially raised in Uganda. But the story I love to tell is that you know Africa at the time was under British rule, so she was technically a British citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And then she moved to Montreal for a lot of years, so she's fluent in French, which is really cool.
Okay.
And she grew up in Montreal, Canada, for all those years, and then right before her senior year, the summer of her junior year, they said, I want to go open, because my grandpa's a businessman, he's a restaurant owner, so he did Indian food, and so he opened a branch up in Beverly Hills, moved my mom out on her senior year, and she had to go to Westchester High in her senior year, but nevertheless, she still loved it, because then, you know, she got to go to USC and go into the business field, which is really cool.
Yeah, I grew up in Westchester, next door to St. Bernard's High School, right next door to Westchester, so it's a good place to be from.
Oh, yeah.
I love Redondo Beach better, obviously.
Yeah.
I like better. So, anyway, so your parents have lived here the whole time, and they drove all the way to Cedars-Sinai to have you.
I know.
That's
I was
a long
like,
way. What's up with that?
Well, no, actually, they've been married for 24 years, but when they were dating, my mom, because she had to work up in Hollywood and stuff, she lived in Beverly Hills.
Okay.
So she did live in Beverly Hills at the time. I'm not sure if I guess I was. By the time I was born, they were living in Redondo.
Okay.
But I know Nick was born at Torrance, my older brother Nick. So, Yeah, I guess they just want a nice little Cedar Sinai.
Yes, yeah, that's a long drive.
It is.
If the baby's popping out, that's a long way to go from Redondo Beach. So you are now a senior at Redondo Union High School. And I know that I saw you in a play when you were a freshman.
Yeah.
So you have, were you always an actor as a kid, or did you, and a singer? You're a marvelous singer, incredible singer.
Thank you.
So when did you first figure out you liked this acting and singing?
I first figured out I liked singing from a very, very young age, probably like 6 or 7. Did musical theater shows to kind of enhance that, picked up guitar and did guitar lessons and such. But I didn't really know until I loved musical theater until I joined Belasco Theater Company, which is a theater company run by Shanti Belasco, and that's in Hermosa Beach.
Okay.
And we did it at the Hermosa Beach Playhouse all the time. We'd act and sing and yada, yada, yada. And that was basically my elementary and middle school life. Then I started, you know, that was like, again, mostly singing and dancing. But when I got into high school, my teacher, Justin Baldridge, who's the drama teacher at Redondo, taught me more of the acting fundamentals. And so I took a break almost from like singing so much and dancing, but really honing in on those, you know, the skills of acting and finding your objectives and a lot of paperwork as well. You got to write down for, you know, what you're thinking in the moment as well. It helps.
You have to write things down to be an actor?
It's an exercise. It's one of the exercises he has. Yeah.
So this is like, drama class isn't like ditching school, that it's a real class.
No, no, we sit there sometimes and he'll be like, what are you feeling in this moment? Write it down. And we're like, I'll just act it. It's like, no, you need to have a very direct, you know, moment.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so it's frustrating.
Yeah.
But it's really worth it because you'll see how it works into students in the shows themselves. Mm. So I loved acting, and then I did that mostly freshman, sophomore year, but all 4 years I've been at the high school, I've done the musicals as well, which has been really cool. And the musical that you were talking about, my freshman year, was when I got cast as a lead as a freshman, which was an honor as well, was Grease. And that was a lot of fun as well. And you stayed after, you came up.
Oh, yeah. I turned into a groupie at Grease. I was going to get into that later, but I remember... I was on the city council. I wasn't mayor yet. And then Larry Rosalowski, I've known him for years from AYSO. And he asked me to come out just to watch a play. I'm going, I don't know if I really want to, because I'll go to a few seconds about myself. Growing up and growing up till I was about 57, I would say, or 56, I wouldn't be caught dead at a play.
Yeah.
I usually left. I walked out of Man of La Mancha. I walked out of 42nd Street. I walked out of The Music Man. I fell asleep.
Yeah.
Just didn't work for me. I don't know why. But then I went to the play, and I told Larry I was going to go, okay, I'm going to go support the school.
Right.
And then Christy Greenleaf asked me also.
Yes,
and she's a good friend. And so Pam and I went, and I sat down, and I was just taken by the whole production of Grease.
Yeah.
It was incredible. And my wife goes, I can't believe you – she loved it. But she goes, I can't believe you like it, Steve. I go, I don't know. I'm just having a ball. We liked it so much, I went back 2 more times. And I went to your final show when all the actors come out. And I was like a 57-year-old groupie out there wanting to get autographs, and everybody signed the poster. It's hanging in the mayor's office, by the way, all those posters.
Oh, wow.
All the autographed, the poster for the play.
Yeah.
I have all the actors and the people that worked on it signed it.
Yeah.
They're all hanging up at City Hall.
That's amazing.
Yeah, they were cool. But it turned out the high school got me interested in musicals and plays. And now I've even gone to see plays in other places now. You made me a man of a man for all seasons here, and I'm an old guy. But you were in Grease, and Chris Ward, he was, you would call him the lead. Was he the main dude?
He played Danny.
And Danny, that's right.
You know, I was a freshman, and he was a junior, and it was kind of weird, you know, because you know the T-Birds in Grease, for example. You know, there's 5 of them. I was the freshman, and then all the rest of them were juniors. So they were 2 years older than me, and I was like, well, I got to start, you know, shaping up. I can't be like that scrawny little guy right there. But so I became really good friends with him, and I'm still friends with him today. And it's amazing the way he works as an actor and how he develops his skills and hones them in. It's an honor to work beside him as well. And that was just so cool because he, like, stole the show. He really did.
He's very talented.
Yeah.
I had his dad on the show. Mike was on the show
once. Yeah,
about, you know, talking about his business and his life and his family.
Yeah, Village Runner.
Village Runner, great guy. But, Chris was amazing in that. But the whole, what do you call it, ensemble?
Is that
the right word? Everybody was so talented. Even my wife was mentioning the other day after your Christmas Carol that you couldn't believe all the talent up there.
Exactly.
And, you know, I was not the guy that hung out with the drama kids or in high school.
Exactly.
You know, and it just wasn't, it was a different planes or whatever. But, and it wasn't that they were something wrong or I was something wrong. We just didn't hang out together. So
yeah,
I never knew much about it.
Yeah.
But it was incredible. But Justin Baldrige has been your director and teacher ever since you've been in school.
Yeah, he's been there for about 8 years. So kind of two generations of what a student would be. Being at Redondo, and he's been such a big influence on all of our lives, you know, speaking on behalf of, you know, our whole club there at Redondo. And he really inspires us to not just do, you know, theater as well, mm-hmm. because he teaches us skills that can, you know, you can apply to everyday life. He even says, like, you know, at the end of the year, like the last day, he's like, even if you don't want to be an actor when you grow up, I know what you've learned here and how you guys have all grown. It's gonna help you for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. And all those kids take that to consideration. And the people that are juniors or sophomores or freshmen, they take this class the next year. You know, I was in beginning drama freshman year, and then mm-hmm. I did advanced drama for 3 years, or I'm on my third year right now.
Okay.
And I love it. I love it so much because you learn more public speaking skills. You learn how to communicate with others, and you just learn how to act, something that you love to do already. So I think that's what's really cool about it. And he also he hosts our club there. I'm the president of that RUHS Theater Arts Club, and that club is designed for people to get involved or to just see what's happening. So anybody at the school can join that club. So we open up our doors, and like even, you know, people don't really feel like drama is a very exclusive group, because, you know, sometimes people think, oh, those are the sports kids, those are the band kids, you know. But at drama, we strive to make more people come because we think that's what bonds us as a school in general. Not just a drama program.
You got a great school, and everybody's friendly. And
yeah,
like it.
I will say it's a walk though, because you know we're the largest high school in California.
You have to. Well, I know the back to school night where the parents have to go.
Yeah.
Oh, it was amazing. I'm sprinting from class to class.
Oh, of course.
The students do it. So you said that you, the other people there for public speaking, because that's important. When I was in high school, there's no way, there's not enough money in the world to get me to even talk on the radio, and I wouldn't talk to people. I was extremely shy. I didn't know you. And I had to go into Santa Monica College for a very short time, but the only classes I really remember taking that were helped me were speech classes.
Yeah.
To help you stand up in front of a group and talk. And that helped me along my life in business and things. But now you can't shut me up. That's the problem. But so you're going to go to college. Where do you think you're going to go?
Well, I've applied to 4 schools so far. We got 3 Cal States, San Francisco, San Diego, and Monterey. And then DePaul in Chicago, which has a great program. My emphasis is I want to do film production, not like film studies or anything.
Right.
And the way, you know, people are always like, but you've acted all of your life. Like, how is that even possible? Like, what? But, you know, Redondo ended up, they hired me for, you know, Redondo. Like,
yeah,
the city of Redondo Beach hired me as a student at Redondo to sometimes help out at the theater sometimes mm-hmm. When they need lighting done or sound done. And that was all taught to me by my old theater manager, Aaron Morgan. And he really mentored me over the summer when he was showing me all the different aspects of working around light, sound, building sets, painting sets, or working backstage. And that even included when we had events, we'd have to talk to people. Like, hi, how are you? Come sit over here. You
right.
know, that comes with that public speaking. So Aaron really kind of helped me develop this newfound love for production in general, like I said, with sounds and lights. So I turned that almost into film production. Sound engineering and light engineering come with that too.
Mm-hmm.
And those are something... things that I was like, you know what, I could see myself doing this because I'm proficient at it. You know, if I'm getting paid, I should be
you better
get at what I'm doing.
Well, you can go on further in life. Look at one of the famous childhood stars when I was a kid. It was Ron Howard.
Yep.
And now he's behind, he's very mega famous, right?
Exactly.
Now he's an old guy like me, but he's making billions out there making movies.
Right.
And you never see him on screen anymore, but he's just moved on to production. And
exactly.
Directing. Well, so, I see you being in the front of the camera for a long time, they're not behind it.
Exactly, you know? And like that's the thing. Like I've told people, they're like, "Well, why don't you want to act anymore?" And I'm like, "No, I never said I didn't want to stop acting. I love acting, I love singing, I love performing in general, and you know, talking to people." But what's so cool is that you know everyone needs like sound at all these big corporate events, or you know, I'm kind of just trying to find my own like passion, you know, for that kind of thing. And it's hard to find that when you're 18, trying to see what you're going to do the rest of your life. In fact, mm-hmm. you can't. But with that, I want to try exploring that in college. It's kind of like film production or maybe just sound engineering or light engineering. That would be just so cool just to even have that on my you know resume, just going into college with that, testing it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the schools that I told you before, they all have great programs in film production.
Yeah, if you have a degree in production and sound and all that, then you don't have to worry about not getting that job as the alternate for some TV show or something or whatever you
exactly.
call it. Yeah, so you have a real career and you can still act.
Yeah, and I don't have to go to college for acting as well. I mean, I can take classes, I can keep honing it in, I can, you know, maybe meet Mr. Baldrige a couple of years, like, hey,
that's
give
right.
me a private lesson.
He'll be your personal tutor
Right,
I was having work for you.
Exactly.
And so it's incredible because I'm not one to just spread compliments to anybody just for no reason at all. And watching you perform has been it's been fun. I've seen you now in Greece, Cabaret, Thoroughly Modern Millie, Christmas Carol, and now coming up in Beauty and the Beast, and we'll get to that in a little while. But so far, out of the four things I mentioned, which was your favorite play?
Oh, man. Well, I can't, you know, Beauty and the Beast, we haven't even gotten really into it.
Christmas Carol, Thoroughly Modern Millie, Cabaret in Greece.
You know, I'm going to have to say maybe Greece, because I know we were talking about it earlier, but it just, I think it was more of the thrill of just being a freshman and being on stage and getting to sing Grease Lightning for my whole school. They rented a car and put it on stage. It was a golf cart, but they made it into a car. And, like, you know, I was like, dang, you know, like, this is cool. I get to ride on, you know, backstage we'd all bond, but, you know, like, everyone drew the car and whatever. No, I'm joking. But
no, it's cool. You have people, you have all these strangers out in the audience giving you a standing ovation.
Exactly.
You know, that's, if you get me to give you a standing ovation when you're acting, that's something. And not because of anything else, that I just never did it before.
Yeah.
But, but I remember when I saw Cabaret. I'm not exaggerating when I say I don't go to plays. I did not know what that play was about. I did not read the
book. Me neither.
I never saw the play. I never knew anything about it. I didn't know it was so dark. I thought it was Joel Grey and Liza Minnelli dancing on the stage the whole time from 40 years ago.
Yeah, everyone knows the names. You know, Joel Grey, and they're like, that, you know, Liza Minnelli, like, she's so known for that. And in fact, in that play, she was. And, you know, I didn't even play any of those characters.
Right.
You know, Chris, as we were talking about before, played the lead, the MC, he was like the crazy guy. And then Sally Bowles was played by Alexis Lapp, who's such a dear friend of mine. She's a fantastic actress. And I got to play Cliff, and that was kind of like the part, like the, I would just say like the controlled part. That was very much like he came to Germany to write, but he found love.
A writer, businessman, or a writer?
Yeah, it was. I think it was a journalist.
Yeah, you wore a suit.
Yeah, I wore the whole play, and like everyone else was poor or something, so they wore run down costumes, and I was very much, you know, like posture.
Well, the interesting thing was, I didn't, and this is no disrespect to Chris, but I didn't think that wasn't, I didn't consider that part the lead. I thought you had the lead.
Yeah, I mean,
in that play,
it's debatable almost, because we know that, you know,
I'm the mayor, I can call you the lead. See, there we go.
There you go, I was the lead. No, yeah. But I think we were all, three of us were leads, basically. He kind of guided the show along,
right.
I guess, like he was, it was in the eyes of him, you know. Mm-hmm. I would say I definitely had a big part with, you know, Alexis. You know, we found love, but then it's kind of different from like what a musical would be. You know, we usually like find love, break up, and then we get back together at the end. That's a typical musical.
Mm-hmm.
But the reason why people appreciated Cabaret so much was because, I mean, it was so dark and so much symbolism. We didn't really have a set. We had rolling sets.
I remember.
And the ensemble moved those. And it was kind of like, at one point, the ensemble trapped, you know, me and Alexis and I in. And the point of it was to be like, you can't get out of this mess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't get out of Germany. You can't, you know, you will live here forever. Your life is destroyed almost. But at the end of the play, I left and then she got trapped. And like, there's just so much symbolism behind that. And, that was all under the eyes of Mr. Baldridge as well.
And he adapted the play for the school. He doesn't write it. He just adapts it for you. And you stay pretty close to the strip.
Yeah. Well, for Cabaret, we did definitely, but, he was very much a big part in finding different elements to put in. Visually.
Well, I had to go back and see it more than once because the first time I was so shocked because I didn't know what it was about.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like a happy play.
Right.
It was intense. But when I went back and saw it a second time, the third time, I got to relax and it was incredibly good. Okay, we're taking a break and come back and talk to Alex some more about his career so far.
Lighting the way with positive energy and love. HRNradio.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to HealthyLife.net. Steve Aspel sitting here with Alec Johnson. And, I'm going to tell you, Alec, we were talking about the play Cabaret, and then the next one's Thoroughly Modern Millie.
Right.
I got a history lesson. Like I said, I did not know what it was about. And I want to mention one other young people that was in that play with you was Gabrielle Bruno.
Yes.
And she goes to Chapman, I think, now. She was incredibly talented. She stuck out of my mind.
Yeah, she was incredible as well.
The talent. Do all high schools have that kind of talent, or just us?
It really depends on who's leading it, you know, and that's why we give a lot of credit to Mr. Baldridge. And, you know, he also has a team as well. He has a choreographer and he has a voice director. The voice director is Matt and our choreographer is Val. That's what we call him. And, you know, without them, the show would never be formed. It would never be something where we were all prepared to do something. But with their help and guidance, it's like in the pushing, you know, and all the Saturday rehearsals that we had. All of those combined really make this show what it is.
Now, to put on a play like that, You'll just go in the day before and work on this. You have to practice and rehearse for how many times? How many hours?
A long time. I mean, we sometimes do 15-hour or 15, 20-hour weeks. And, you know, that's outside of school.
Exactly. You're not just doing this in school hours in your class.
No. Yeah, this is seventh period.
This is a calling.
Exactly.
You have to love it. You don't just do it to get extra credit.
Right, exactly. I mean, it does give you a visual arts, you know, what you have to graduate to get out of high school. You have to have 1 year. But, you know, for me, I have too many credits because I've done all the plays that, you know, I'm over 200 or the required amount that you need for your A through G. But people just like doing the plays because of, I guess, for one, the people. I think that's a really big part, being with your friends every day. It's just, there's nothing really like it. You can't really describe it to someone, like that bond that you feel. And the second is just doing the play in general, you know, and people were kind of scared of cabaret, literally, because they were just like, they don't, you know, like, this seems really weird. Like, why isn't this some peppy musical? But then, you know, Mr. B took some huge risks. Like, at the very end, he projected a swastika on the theater.
Yeah.
And it blew up everywhere, and, like, people freaked out. But that was the point.
I didn't freak out. It just, that sent the movie, I mean, the play right home.
Yeah. That was the last image.
Mr. Baldridge didn't take risk, I wouldn't be talking to you right now.
Yeah.
I mean, watching the plays at the high school, I'm not blowing smoke. I don't have no reason to blow smoke. I would not be this theater enthusiast that I am now if I didn't see you guys there.
Yeah.
That cabaret was a step above and beyond all the things I'd seen ever in my life because it was so intense. And the swastika at the end was, it just put the story right in the heart.
It was done in good taste as well.
It wasn't bad. It was, we're not making a joke about it, but it was just part of the play.
Yeah, it really set the mood, and it changed people's way of thinking almost. That was the point.
It did.
Changed yours, you know.
It did. Well, I got to learn about what the play was about. I got to learn a bit more about Nazi Germany, and I got to learn about how talented everybody was at Redondo High.
Exactly.
So let's move on to Thoroughly Modern Millie. Now, how did you get involved? You were going to be involved in that anyway, but tell me about your part in the play. Because I had no idea. Let me start, finish it up. I didn't know about that play either. I've never read the book or saw the movie. I had no idea.
Yeah, me neither. Same thing with Cabaret. I mean, Grease and Beauty and the Beast are the only ones I'm very familiar with. But, you know, with Cabaret and Thoroughly Modern Millie, I just had no idea.
Yeah, but you had an excuse. You were 16 years old. I'm 57 years old at the time. I had no excuse for never seeing them. So Thoroughly Modern Millie, who picked that? Justin?
So Mr. B picked it, as he does all the shows with his team of directors, and they picked the show because he wanted to get into a lighthearted mood after the year before just going down in the, you know, the depths. So we did Thoroughly Modern Millie, and you know, that's the semester before he was doing Macbeth, which is a famous Shakespeare play, and I did lights for that because I wanted a break. I didn't want to do so much acting in the first semester of my junior year because junior year is very tough. So I did lights for Mac, but then I wanted to get back into theater again. So because you know I caved in, so I went and auditioned for Thoroughly Modern Millie, and I got Jimmy, which was the lead male, and in it was Alex Bruckner. She played Millie, the lead role,
right.
And I can't even tell you how talented that girl is. She really knows how to invest herself into a part, immerse herself into a part, and really fit that character. I kind of feel like she was typecasted into it because she she had the look for it. She had the acting ability. She had the voice. She was really all in for that part. And to work with her and just bounce off all of her emotions was just so easy because, sometimes you don't always work with your partner that well.
Right.
But with her, it was very seamless.
Well, Thoroughly Modern Millie, it wasn't all that much. There's a little slave trading going on here. And
there were little undertones.
Yeah, like. It was nothing like Grease or something like that. You had a little political satire or something in these plays here.
Yeah, it was New York in the 1920s. So
right.
Everyone's wearing flappers. I was in a suit again for the second year in a row. And, I came in as a New Yorker, so it was nice to be there, you know. But
the guy's going into type, whatever you call it. You're going into character right now.
Am I showing up? No.
Yeah, New York, whatever.
Yeah, no, I'm not too much of one. But, you know, and then the whole plot is basically she comes to New York as a broke girl that wants to live her dream being an actress, but, you know, she actually hits reality and figures out, oh, no, that's actually impossible. So she gets put into a home where she gets to stay for free or something like that, and somehow she gets into white slave trading, and not her, but the person that owns her.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of weird politics inside the whole plot. But it's kind of a cool little story with like that weird twist, obviously.
And who was the lady that was the slave trader? Funabashi, right?
No. Funabashi was the wealthy woman. She's actually my mom in the play, technically.
Okay.
But the one who played the slave trade was, again, Alexis Lapp.
That's right. I'm mixing up my actresses here. I know Craig Funabashi really well.
Yeah. He works for the city as well. Yeah,
he's a good guy. He's one of our commissioners, I think. Yeah, he's a good guy. The Chamber of Commerce and stuff. So, I couldn't. You know, I think I'd get my daughters to act. They're a little shy. They wouldn't. They're like dad. They wouldn't. They're young. They wouldn't go out. Never want to be out in the public.
Right.
Trust me. When I was young, they wouldn't go out in the public.
It's scary. Don't get me wrong. It's something. It's frightening. It's
You get stage fright before a play. Do you ever want to throw up or something?
I used to. I'll admit. Like I said, with middle school, definitely. It was just like. Or if my friends came from middle school and they surprised me, like I'd be like, "No, mom, don't tell them." I almost kept it away, but now I'm proud of it. I'm proud of this art that we do at Redondo and the shows that we put on. People respect the program like no other, and it's really amazing.
What kind of rush is it when you're all introduced, you know, person by person, or what, in your ensemble, you come out in whatever your character was,
right?
And you take the final bow, and that's got to be a hell of a rush. Is you can't see the people in the audience, can you?
No, you can't. It's those lights at Redondo, or you know, in any theater, it's just either the spotlight or the stage lights, the front lights. Those just wash out your eyes.
You're getting huge applause.
It's all about what you hear.
It's got to make you feel like $1 million.
It especially for. Like cabaret, like taking your own bow as a lead, because as an ensemble member you bow together, but as a lead you do bow by yourself, but you feel that energy, that rush, like you said, of just that electric crowd, and you always get one of those, and it's amazing. That feeling, and I think it's a feeling that everyone should have.
Well, the smiles on your faces is a testimonial to how you feel about it.
Exactly.
You see the smiles on all the actors' faces that are coming out, even the ones that had a little bitty part. They're all happy.
Well, that's the greatest thing. It's like if there was this part, that only had like 3 lines, 4 lines, because that's what the, writer put in, that person could steal the show. They could be better than me. They could be better than the lead. They could be better than the ensemble because that person helped, develop that plot. They helped make the plot true. And that's going to be really evident in, Beauty and the Beast with a lot of parts.
Is John Webb going to be in Beauty and the Beast?
He is not. He graduated last year.
He did graduate. Oh, I better keep up because Mike Webb's our city attorney.
He is. Yeah.
Yeah. He graduated. Oh, sorry there, John. He's a great guy, too.
Yeah, very talented.
So you moved on to, then we came to the Christmas Carol.
Yes, this
now,
year.
That was an hour and 15 minutes, no intermission. That's how you advertise it.
I loved it, yeah.
And was that a weird thing, not having intermission?
Absolutely. I was casted as Scrooge, which is the lead in that, not musical, play.
You wore a suit.
No, I didn't. No,
okay,
I did not wear a suit.
I called a jacket a suit.
Yeah, I wore it was like an 1800s kind of suit. And then for the majority of the play, like I'd say 45 minutes, I wore bedclothes. So I wasn't complaining at all. It was just my pajamas, basically.
That's right. You started out like you were, it was a whole different part of A Christmas Carol.
Yes.
You were out talking to the audience and then talking to you acted like you were talking to the audience or talking to your actors.
Yeah.
And you're the director of a play, basically.
Yeah,
right?
That's the way Mr. Baldridge adapted it. He wanted it to be a play within a play.
Mm-hmm.
So he set it up as if we were rehearsing for our final dress rehearsal for a play called A Christmas Carol, if that makes sense. So, like, I was the director saying, all right, guys, we're going to do, Scrooge, and it's going to be great. Or we're going to do, like, the play and such. And then all the actors have to get ready. But then apparently Scrooge was in the hospital, so I was like, I'll do it.
You stuck.
And the audience already knew that, so they're like clapping, And then we start to get into the play. We do the whole play. And then at the very end, it comes to, Scrooge finds love, not like a person, but, family and love together. And at the end, we come back to the director, and the director's point of view has changed. Because he used to be grumpy.
You were Scrooge. The director was a Scrooge. You picked that up right away.
Exactly.
And you changed as a director.
Yeah, exactly.
See, I paid attention. You thought I didn't. It was pretty good. Now, the kid that played Tiny Tim, obviously not a student.
No. Okay. He's one of our teachers at Redondo's son, Miss Easton.
How come the little kids always get the biggest ovation? It's just the way it goes.
They're too adorable.
I know they are. All right, speaking of adorable, we'll go hear some commercials. Be back in a minute.
Positive Enlightenment. All you need in one place, here at HRNradio.com.
Hello again. Welcome back to HealthyLife.net. And when I met you before the show, Alec, I told you it was going to go fast, didn't I?
Yeah.
It goes quick.
Like,
yeah, that's good.
Third segment, yeah.
I can sit here for a long time with you. You're very interesting and talented. And it's amazing that you can sing, you dance, you sing, and you act. And you play an instrument also?
Yeah, I play guitar.
You did good?
I'm moderate.
He's a bassist. Our program director here, Jay, wants to have somebody play guitar for him.
Yeah, I'll give him my number afterwards.
You have to learn how to play younger music there, Jay. But anyway, when did you first have your first time you ever sang in front of a group of people, like in a play or a musical?
Right.
How old were you?
I was in a musical, probably like 6. It was ensemble.
Okay.
And then when I really got into leads, which was like when I was 13 or 14, 15, somewhere around there, that's when it started getting pretty nerve-wracking to do, like, singing for crowds, you know, leading the song, falling in love with a girl, you know, it's like, it's kind of weird. Doing stage kisses were also very interesting for me. That was a whole nother experience because, you know, I'm, again, scrawny little seventh grader, like, this is kind of funny. When I was in Belasco, I did a show called Guys and Dolls, and I was in seventh grade, so I was about, what, 14 or maybe, actually younger.
Yeah, younger than that, 12.
Younger, 12, yeah. And I was cast as Sky Masterson, which is like the lead guy for
I've never seen it,
Guys and Dolls. Well, he was like a lead gambler, basically. Okay. That's what, you know, set in New York. And then there's a missionary who's the lead girl, and she was a senior in high school. So that was probably the, one of the weirdest things, because like the director said, all right, you guys are going to do a stage kiss. I was like, what?
Really? Oh,
and
wow.
I'm like, that was, and she felt, you know, super uncomfortable because she had known me since I was so much younger, and she might have been a junior, but it's still, she was in high school, and it was like, whoa, that was a little, I mean, yeah, she wasn't excited.
You had a kiss when you were 12? Well, I had to wait a lot longer than that.
Yeah.
Not even a stage kiss. Yeah. So let's go on to my favorite play in my entire life, and I got to preface that by my daughter, Katie, was born really early in 1990. I mean, premature early. And
yeah.
So the first thing she I remember doing with her when she started becoming aware of the world was watching Beauty and the Beast when she was little.
Absolutely.
And we watched it over and over and over again. It was that or Barney. So I chose Beauty and the Beast because
she liked
Barney too. But I know I can pretty much recite that play, and it's my favorite thing of all time. We went and saw it a few weeks ago at the Pantages Theater with the professional troupe, and they were incredible. And I took both my daughters and my wife, and it was great. So how did you guys choose Beauty and the Beast?
Well, we found out about the play back in April because he was changing the program at the time, Mr. Baldridge, that is. And he announced, you know, we're going to do Beauty and the Beast. And we're like, whoa, what? That's incredible. You know, we were super, super excited about it. Very, very pumped because, I don't know, what an honor. You know, just like kind of a cool Disney show as like our last show for high school. And so I think he developed it. He was between two plays. I think the other one was Seussical. And he just went with Beauty and the Beast because it just felt right. And I think when you have that gut feeling, then that's when you should do it. So we picked Beauty and the Beast, and he did, and we immediately did some auditions just to be in the class because we just wanted to hone in our skills. So he wanted to create a musical theater class, so that's what we did for the first semester of high school right now.
Okay.
And then I think 2 weeks ago we had auditions for the actual play within the class, so everyone knows that they're going to have a part, you know, like whether or not because they're in the show. But now he's auditioning for parts. So after two callbacks of things, I got cast as Gaston. And that is like the, how would you describe it? Like the tough guy? Because you know the play, the tough guy.
He's the lead.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's why you've said a couple of times that you were the second one, or Chris was the first guy, and you're the second lead or something. But you always have the parts where you steal the show. And again, not disrespect Chris Ward, because he's marvelous.
Oh, he's great.
You steal the show. And, but Gaston, to me, is the bad guy. And remember at the beginning, he's just kind of a goofball.
Yeah, he's ironic. You know, he's very much like trying to hit on,
Belle.
In colloquial terms, like, you know, he's trying to hit on Belle, you know, and he wants her, but Belle obviously doesn't want, him to be around. And Belle, by the way, is Serenity Robb, who's a fantastic actress. She's been with Redondo for a lot of years.
Now, what'd she play the last play?
In Totally Modern Millie, she played, I don't remember her name, Dorothy. I think that was the name. She was Alex Bruckner's like sidekick almost, girlfriend.
Okay.
And but now she got cast as Belle. And
you better nail it because I know this one.
Yeah, I know. This is the play.
She can sing too. Is she great?
Oh no, Serenity's been singing for a while.
Really?
She's done very, very well.
Now that's going to be the set's got to be amazing to build. Now who builds the set?
We have our tech team. For the past 3 years, we've been building sets for almost all of our shows. Greece was a really extensive one because it had like the big platform and like revolving door. It was crazy.
Yeah.
For this one, I'm not sure. I think he's renting half the sets and he's also building some as well.
Okay.
So that we still have a little bit of original, but it would be too much time and effort if we had to build the whole castle. And we know when it's easier just to rent one out. But at the same time, nevertheless, it looks like majestic. It looks amazing. The show's going to be really cool, especially with our lighting team within our tech class. and the sounds that they're going to implement. It's just, it's really exciting to see what they're going to do.
Now, are you going to shoot a goose out of the air and have LeFou catch it?
Catch it, yeah, probably. I think that's the thing. It's been a while. I haven't seen Beauty and the Beast since I was probably like 10, so I got to watch it again.
You better go watch it again.
I know. I'm falling behind.
I actually went out about a couple years ago about the director's cut, where it has some of their outtakes on it, too. But and they interviewed the actors and the actresses.
Did you give it to your daughter for Christmas? Or is she too old now?
No, gave it to me. No, my daughter, we watch it together. She's 25 years old. We still watch it together.
That's a great tradition.
When it came out a few months ago at the Pantages Theater, she called me from work, and she said, Dad, Beauty and the Beast is coming out. Pantages, you want to go? So she still wants to bond me on that.
Wow.
So I guarantee you, if she ever gets married, the father-daughter dance will be tale as old as time, and if we can't get somebody like you to sing, that's Angela Lansbury. Yeah, we got to get somebody to sing it.
Yeah, we'll get Angela Lansbury.
Yeah, you'll have to write a check for $1 million and get Angela Lansbury to come and sing it for me. But it's incredible. And we used to dance like that in my front room. I hold her when she was 2 years old or 3 years old. We'd dance around in circles. And when I hear that song to this day, I still get a little teary-eyed. I mean, I really love that song. And the play is incredible.
Wow.
So you tell Mr. Baldrige, you better not mess this up because I'm going to be the critic. I'm sure you guys are going to do great. I can't imagine building the set and just to get all that and to move the parts around when you're doing it.
Exactly. And yeah, it's a very difficult process. But like I said, with preparation and all, it's totally worth it.
Are you going to fall off the back of the castle and land on the floor?
You know, that's the thing. My buddy Jacob, he's the one who actually just got cast as Beast in Beauty and the Beast, Jacob Reno. And it's actually funny because his girlfriend is Serenity. So she's Belle. So,
intrigue here.
Yeah, no, but that's what I said. But at the same time, he just told me, he said, you know I kill you, right? I'm like, what? He's like, when's the last time you saw Beauty and the Beast? And I was like, I don't know, man.
You better go see it.
I'm like, I didn't know Gaston dies. That's sad.
He does die. Well, we all know the ending. It was kind of sad. You know, he's just a big lunkhead. He wasn't like an evil man until he got the mirror, and he wanted to get all the citizens in town.
Right.
Kill the Beast.
Exactly.
And charge the place. And
kill my friend Jacob. No,
yeah,
but.
Yeah, you'll kill him. But it was, that's my play. You know, I'll probably go to every one of them.
Hopefully.
Yeah, I will, just to see the nuances of anything you may change up in any given time.
Yeah, so we're all pretty excited, like I said. And
when does it come out? It
comes out in March. I don't know the exact dates, but it's in the middle of March, and we'll have definitely a lot of flyers and posters around Redondo.
Okay, well, I'm going to come back. We'll come back for one more segment after this word from our sponsors.
Uplifting Talk, HealthyLife.net.
When you need a positive point of view, turn to HealthyLife.net, your 24/7 radio network for a better future.
Hello again. Welcome back to HealthyLife.net. Steve Aspel, Aspel on the Esplanade. I'm sitting here with Alec Johnson. And, you know, I'm envious of your talent because I've never had that kind of talent. And you're a remarkable young guy here.
Well, thank you.
And just to watch you entertain us has been a privilege. It really has.
Thank you.
I know that you will do. Of course, Gaston's usually like 6'5" or something. You have to wear stilts or something like that. I don't know.
I know. I'm 5'9", I think, or 5'8". Well, so it's like, and I also got to hit the gym.
You got to hit the gym, yeah. You're going to carry that. You will be the main person of the show.
Technically the main part is, you know, the Beast, because he really does guide the show as well. I think my part specifically really develops the show as well, like the plot and kind of like the contradictions of, like, you know, the guy wants the woman doesn't want the guy, and then there's another guy. It's almost like a love triangle almost in Beauty and the Beast. And I guess my part helps establish that, whereas the Beast and Belle kind of lead the show and direct it where it needs to go.
Right.
And so, and again, those two actors are amazing as well.
You're what they call a generous actor. You deflect the attention to your partners over there.
Well, Mr. Baldrige makes it, you know, he said, and this is also, I mean, he's probably learned this as well, acting is not about you. It can never be about you, because if you make the show about you, then you fail as a person, I think, and as an actor. When you're on stage, the most important person on stage, if there's two people, is the other person in front of you.
And you're making me a better actor if you're helping me?
Exactly. Okay. I need to keep complimenting you so that you can make me better. No, I'm kidding. But it's kind of...
Cool. I understand. I understand. That works that way in politics or insurance or whatever. You know,
yeah,
you
it's a give and take. It really is. And so when I support other actors, I'm doing it because that will help me as an actor, and it'll help them. Because, again, it cannot just be about you, or else your show has failed. Okay. So, and that's what we're trained to do at Redondo.
You know, it's being an actor is something everybody really wished they had the talent to do, an actor or a singer. Somebody said, "What if you had one wish, what would you be able to do, like play guitar like Eric Clapton, or, you know, act like, you know, the most Robert De Niro or something?" Everybody would want to be able to do that. And but you have the ability to do that, and that's incredible for your future.
Thank you.
We were so you said during the break you told me you got a job, a real job, not in acting or something.
Yes. I just got hired from Apple, retail with the iPhones and the iPads, and I applied there online thinking, because when you apply for a job, you can't always be like dead set on it. You have to apply other places. So I applied at like Trader Joe's and all these other great corporations. But they got back to me with a group interview and came in. It was like 26 people. It was kind of, strange. I was really nervous for that because I was like, well, I won't go in there coming in like I know what I'm talking about. But for a second, I thought that, applying to Apple, you'd have to know a lot about it, and which I do. I feel like I'm pretty proficient in that. But they asked us more like social-based questions, like who are you as a person? Please tell me about who you are. And at the end, they said, thank you for all your responses. Here at Apple, we believe in thinking different, which is like a direct quote from Steve Jobs.
Right.
And they just said, look, it's people over product here at Apple. They said people can come in, people will come into Apple sometimes, and they need to tell you their whole day, and you have to listen to it. And I was so eager. I was like, I could do that. I really feel like I could really implement myself into a product, but through people as well. So when they offered me the job, I was shocked, and I was so happy. And I honestly think, bringing in the whole what we've been talking about for the past hour, acting, would have never been able to get something like that. Because, if you ever go into the Apple Store, you'll notice people in there are just so friendly,
mm-hmm.
and they're so approachable. And I feel like that's everything that I've tried to aspire to be, kind of go into that area of talking to people, public speaking, really helping people. And that is exactly what Apple does. And I couldn't be more humbled to be part of that company.
You might own the place someday. You'd be the president of Apple someday. And you can fix my broken iPhone. Then, yeah. Not now.
Of course.
I went to the Apple Store in New York City. It's right next to Central Park back there. And in August, and it went there at about midnight. It's open.
Yeah.
And the place was crammed full of people. But all the people that worked there came and looked for customers. They don't stand in the corner with their back to you.
They can't.
They're like actors.
Exactly.
They're role players, and they guided me through the place. And I was the oldest guy in the place. The funniest, at midnight, guys my age aren't usually up anyway. But then, cruising around an Apple Store was something they just like, sir, are you okay? You're what are you doing here?
Yeah.
And with the last week you mentioned you know about the iPhones.
Right.
I was Santa Claus on the police Christmas sled.
Oh,
that just really last cool. Wednesday in my neighborhood, and a couple of the guys had handed my phone and said take a picture, and they couldn't do it. So I'd always find somebody under 20.
Yeah.
Because you know how to do it. Because guys my age can't take pictures on iPhones. It's a foreign object to me. But you've grown up with these things, so it's incredible. So are you a commission over there or straight?
It's hourly, so it's a really great and. I don't know. Just everyone there is so friendly, and we're about to go into our training days. I don't start working until January, so next year. But going through these training seminars and really just seeing, meeting in the office, like it's just been such an honor just to see like what they're all about, why I'm there, what we're going to be doing. And I mean, probably the most important thing is probably balancing that with the play as well. Trying to keep a school life, work life, and theater life is going to be difficult because, like I said, Beauty and the Beast, we're going to be rehearsing from January, February, and then our shows in March.
When you get into Apple, you get to know people. Tell them to move to Redondo Beach. Get out of Manhattan.
I know.
That brings us so much money into a city. The sales tax alone, what Apple sells, is incredible. They have this machine there.
Yeah.
It's incredible. I'm proud of you. That's good. So let's, we got a few more minutes here. Tell me what, let's talk about back to Beauty and the Beast here. What does it take? How many students does it take to set that up that aren't acting?
Right.
Okay, any one of your plays, you have how many students are involved?
Well, in the play in general, including faculty and everyone, I'd say there's about 60 people that are really prominent. And then we even have more for parent volunteers that work up in front. But I would say the biggest thing is the students, because we have our 25 students, 25 to 30 students that are in the theater class that are just there for acting only. And then we're there for there's the crew for the whole play, and that's broken up into like five different segments. They got lighting crew, sound crew, makeup crew, costume crew, hair crew. So all those people combined are the ones that really make the show, and I think that's what is incredible about the whole experience and such.
Okay, because they're a different class. That's what Mr. Baldwin would sign out for. I remember at Scrooge, he said, "Okay, I can sign your cards now."
Yeah.
After the play, you had to sign off on everybody's card.
Exactly. And those are for people that are in other classes, like beginning drama. They're required to come to the shows so they can write essays and stuff. But in general, I mean, the whole program at Redondo, the drama and everything.
Now, how many parents chip in or help?
Almost all of them. They have to help out in some. He urges them because, you know, we need help. You know,
do they help build a set or sell tickets or?
Yeah, they help sell tickets, and they all find out about all that through online as well. And so everyone's just really supportive in that sense.
Well, good. It's incredible. Maybe I can help this time. I'm going to help you promote it more this time, though, because like I said, I'm a Beauty and the Beast freak. So, all right, everybody, we're going to come back and take a break and then come back and close this baby out.
One of the best things about the technology available today is being able to listen to HealthyLife.net on the go or while I'm at work. Typically, headphones or earphones are required, and let's face it, sometimes they break or get worn out or lost. To find my latest solution to this, I found the Earphone Solutions website while browsing the HealthyLife.net advertiser page. There are plenty of options from basic inexpensive on-the-go earphones to studio-quality headphones for when I really have time to enjoy everything from rock to bach. Earphone Solutions on the HealthyLife.net advertiser page.
All positive talk with a mature edge. HealthyLife.net.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to HealthyLife.net. Aspel on the Esplanade. And Alec, I really appreciate you coming out of here today. I know you're on Christmas break.
Yes.
And you're busy, so you took the time out of your day to spend with an old guy like me, and I'm proud that you did.
Well, thank you for inviting me out here. I mean, this is great.
Well, I just I'm taken with the talent, your talent, and the school's talent, all the people there. I'm taken with the quality of the plays that the school puts on.
Yeah.
I'm impressed that the school and our school district and everybody invests the money in that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, way back when I was a kid, it was football, baseball, and that. It wasn't anything for the acting.
Exactly.
But it's incredible. And if anybody wants to go out and see this next play, they're going to. How can they find out about it? It's on a Facebook page, too?
Yeah, we have a Facebook page, which is RUHS Performing Arts, and we also have an RUHS Theater Arts as well. So they're both sister pages. We also have an Instagram to help you guys stay involved. But I'd say our main website for tickets and all the information is on RUHSdrama.com.
Okay. Because we got to get people, you know, old guys like me that may not be on Facebook to want to come out and see the play.
You'll see ads, and we put them in the Beach Reporter, Daily Breeze as well. Okay. We definitely have a marketing team that does that, fantastic marketing team. And that's done through our board and our booster club as well. But I would say those two are the best ways to find out more about Redondo. Also stopping by, we also have a bunch of flyers in the office.
Okay. Cool.
Well,
all right, well, you better make sure you have somebody contact me, and I'll promote it for your school and your drama club.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And we'll put it on the city website, and I'll get people, and we'll announce it at City Hall.
Awesome.
That's good. Well, anyway, you're a great guy, and I appreciate you. Alec Johnson, everybody, so thank you for coming out, and you have a great Christmas, Alec.
You too, Mr. Aswell.
Steve,
of course.
from now on, you're allowed to call me Steve.
I feel honored.
All right, everyone, have a great Christmas and a Happy New Year.